This is more like it, Latimer. Sandy white beach, clear blue skies, turquoise ocean. This island is far too remote for anybody to interfere with our afternoon tea.
Indeed, ma'am. But some of the creatures that inhabit the island are rather dangerous.
Well, I looked into the local wildlife before we came, and the only things that are dangerous here are insects. All the mammals are small and harmless.
I have taken the liberty of putting the mosquito net around the gazebo, ma'am.
Excellent. And I have procured a special device to keep all of the insects and arachnids at bay, just to be certain.
I could have dealt with that for you, ma'am.
And doubtless it would have broken down or summoned some sort of Cthulhoid entity at the worst possible moment. No, I wanted to make sure it was done properly.
Are you referring to that revolving speaker I saw strapped to one of the nearby trees?
Yes, and I set it all up myself.
Very good, ma'am. I'll just give it a polish before our guest arrives.
Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman. There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't discovered an ancient burial ground beneath your vegetable patch. I'm Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea there for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. There's more shade here at the edge of the jungle, so come and take a seat. Just make sure you drop the mosquito net down behind you once you're undercover. The little blighters are all too eager to bite. This island really is a little jewel in the middle of the ocean. There can't be more than a square mile of jungle, but there's an awful lot of life crammed into it. Whilst I can't say I'm fond of the insects, there are some amazing birds in the trees if you want to look out for them. Beautiful plumage.
I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am, but your guest has arrived, Mr. Alan Baxter.
Oh, splendid. Let's see his calling card. Alan Baxter, Warrior Scribe. Author, martial artist, Zetetic.
Bless you, ma'am.
No, Zetetic.
Oh, dear.
Send him over, Latimer. For those of you who don't know, Alan Baxter writes dark fantasy, horror, and science fiction. His novel, Obsidian, has just been shortlisted for an Aurealis Award, and he also has a novel and novelette shortlisted for the Ditmar Awards, too.
Mr. Alan Baxter, ma'am.
Hello, Alan. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I'm very well. Isn't it warm?
It is rather warm. It is. Do sit down. And yes, I hope it's not too uncomfortable for you. We'll put the mosquito net back down nice and quickly and keep the local wildlife out.
Yes, the mosquitoes are worse than the heat. I spent nearly 20 years living in this sort of climate now, so I should be used to it, but it still annoys me.
So you haven't fully acclimatised?
No, summers, because I grew up in Britain through my mid-20s, I can never remember, but 26 or something like that, I came to Australia the first time, and so I've lived here for nearly 20 years now, and summers are still too hot, and they still go on too long, and I don't get cold in winter. I laugh at people in Australia when they complain about how cold it is, so yes, I think maybe I left too late to actually acclimatise.
Would you care for some tea?
I would love some tea, thank you very much. That part of me has never left Britain.
Marvellous. How do you take it?
Hot, strong, and with milk but no sugar. Thank you.
Ah, perfectly, in other words.
Ah. I'm glad you agree.
I shouldn't say such things because, you know, I want to be inclusive of, you know, everybody's tea drinking habits.
Yes, but there is only one right way to do it.
Would you like some marble cake?
I love marble cake. My grandmother used to have marble cake all the time. That was her thing. Often marble cake with marzipan on top.
Ah, which is exactly what we have here. How fortuitous.
Perfect.
I thought it might be able to handle the heat a little bit better than some of the chocolate things that we have sometimes.
Yes, quite so, yeah.
Don't mind the chickens over there. In fact, they're probably the least dangerous species on this island at this point. Yes. You're not allergic to them, are you?
Not chickens, no. Again, Australia prepares me well. I come from a land where everything tries to kill you, so chickens are no challenge.
You know, I'm so glad you said that, because I've worried in the past that I have this kind of incorrect and rather harsh view of Australian wildlife, but that is very much the impression I've had. So it is true.
Oh, absolutely. Land, sea and air. Everywhere you turn, there's something that wants to that eat you or infect you or just kill you for the sport of it. Equally, 25 odd, whatever it is, million people live here quite happily, and very few people do get eaten or poisoned or whatever, but it does happen, and you hear some tremendous stories, like the guy who was driving through the outback with his elbow out the window of his ute, and he drove over a snake that was just long enough to whip up in the air and bite his elbow as it was sticking out, but being a proper Aussie outback sort of bloke, he just went, shit, I've been bitten by a snake, and he just started driving, and he kept going, and he kept going, and he kept going, and he was nearly passing out, and he crashed into the front of the hospital, and they took him inside and fixed him up, and he came round later on antivenom. So, you know, it kind of breeds a different kind of person, but those stories are very rare. Most of us, I live in the country, but I live in New South Wales, down on the south coast, which is named New South Wales for a reason. It's rolling dairy country, and we get snakes and ticks and stuff like that, but we rarely see them. So
that, I think that might be the most Australian story I've ever heard.
It's one of the most Australian stories I know, yeah.
That's brilliant. Now, in my invitation to you, I asked you to bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring today?
Ah, yeah, well, I brought this. It's, you can see it's a beautiful black lacquer and gold filigree sort of cube. Quite exquisite, really. It's actually a puzzle box. It was made in the 18th century by a fellow by the name of Philippe Le Marchand, and he was a French toy maker. And this was a commission for a wealthy aristocrat named Duc de Lille. Apparently it's colloquially known as the Lament Configuration. I've yet to solve it, but I'll keep trying.
I'm coveting your puzzle box quite seriously. Mm. I have a thing about boxes, and puzzle boxes are like the purest version. Oh,
yes.
It's so beautiful.
Yes, exactly. And there's something sort of dangerously alluring about this one. But you know, what can you do when you're drawn to puzzles?
Well, how did you come to own this?
I just happened to come across it in the ruined house of on a street corner when I nose around places, and you know, you look for story fodder and you hunt around, and sometimes I see abandoned houses or graveyards or things like that, and I can't help but have a poke around.
And you found that inside?
I found it.
Oh, goodness me, I must just be really unlucky, because all I find are spiders and, like, zombies and undead skeletons.
Yeah, that's usually what you have to fight through to find anything decent, and then most of the time you don't get anything decent for your trouble, but
no.
Yeah, keep looking.
Yeah, I will. You know, I'd actually sworn off wandering around old abandoned buildings, and now I can see me going back on that. So, you grew up in the UK, you moved to Australia, and you're a science fiction fantasy writer like I am and many of my friends.
Yes.
I was wondering what it's like in Australia. What's the SFF scene like down there?
It's really, really good. It's very small. The thing about Australia is Australia itself, the country, is absolutely massive, and it's just huge, wide open spaces. But the people tend to cram on places near the sea. 90% of the population live on 10% of the landmass. So if you imagine the size of Australia, that's quite a sort of staggering statistic, really. But even then, there's more people living in the metropolitan borough of London. Like, basically, there's more people inside the M25 than there are in the entire continent of Australia. So everything, another staggering statistic.
So, yeah.
Everything is sort of spread out and takes time, and there's not many people that do things. So our SFF scene and our convention scene and everything like that is very small in terms of numbers, but very well loved and represented, and there's regular cons every year, and you know, you get to basically conventions these days. I mean, it's the same for you guys as well. You know, conventions end up being a chance to just go and get pissed with your friends, basically, and enjoy a bit of like-minded company. But the community here is really supportive. When I was a new writer, sort of trying to find my way in Australia, I was welcomed with open arms, and I try to play that forward now, and when new writers crop up, I make a point of being friendly and introducing them to people. It's really quite a lovely scene. And we've actually got one other thing that's quite interesting as well, which seems to be a little bit unique in the world, is that the SFF scene in Australia, particularly fantasy, to a lesser degree, most of what I do is mostly dark fantasy and horror sort of stuff, with little dabbles into science fiction. And within the greater fantasy scene, we've got a massive proportion of amazing women writers, and in horror and stuff like that, people like Karen Warren and Margot Lanigan and Angela Slater and people. It's so it's quite interesting from this side of the world to watch all the chat that goes on about, you know, more representation required with women writers and stuff like that. And we absolutely have a seriously big sexism problem in Australia. But actually within SFF itself, it's really quite gratifying to see how many women, like the Aurealis Award last year, a couple of the categories, the shortlists were entirely women, which was really interesting to see.
Mm. It sounds wonderful. It sounds actually quite similar to the UK, and that even though we're geographically much closer to each other, it is still a relatively kind of small and perfectly formed community.
Exactly, yeah.
You end up seeing the same people at conventions, and it's wonderful once you've started going a few times. It's kind of like going back home to see your friends, and it's just the best feeling.
Yeah, it's like a sort of 3 or 4 day long party where you just catch up with all your best friends, and you talk shop with people that don't start rolling their eyes and getting bored with you because they're all like-minded, and everybody's, you know, the bar is just this hub of people that you want to be with. It's tremendous fun.
Yeah. So you're also a martial artist as well as a writer. What flavour of martial arts do you practice?
Chinese Kung Fu. The particular style I've done for the last 20 or so years is called Choi Lei Fat. It's a Shaolin-influenced Kung Fu system, but it was developed in the south of China near Guangzhou, what was Canton. When I was first travelling, I've studied martial arts since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, but when I moved to Australia, when I was travelling, initially I was travelling and walking the earth like caning kung fu, as I like to say. And I got to Australia and I knew I was going to be in Sydney for several months because I'd been travelling for months and months and I needed to stop and make some money. So because I knew I was going to be in one place for a while, I went looking around the Chinatown to find somewhere I could train, because I hadn't been actively training for all those months while I was travelling and was sort of missing it because it was such an integral part of my life. And I discovered the Choi Lei Fat School in Sydney Chinatown was actually run by the main man, the grandmaster, the great-great-grandson of the founder of the system, and it was like this most amazing discovery of the sort of the style of Kung Fu that just fit me so well. Yeah, I just kind of lucked into it, really. And at the same time, or in the same sort of period of a few months, I started training that and I met the girl who was going to become my wife. So I kind of ended up staying in Australia. I went back to the UK for a year or so, then married that girl and came back to Sydney and that Kung Fu school and, yeah, life in Australia. That was back in the 90s.
Wow, that sounds like a film plot.
it's a bit of a mad story, really. Yeah, I kind of travelled down through Southeast Asia and into Darwin and across Australia and found this amazing Kung Fu teacher and found this beautiful woman. It's in many ways, it was a lot more dull than that in reality, and there was a lot of sort of stress involved where suddenly going, shit, my life's kind of becoming really weird. I was just going travelling for a couple of years and now I'm planning to leave my friends and family behind, moved to the other side of the planet, but there's this amazing teacher and there's this amazing woman, and so there was a lot of stress involved, and it was anything compressed to a small story can often sound a lot more romantic than it is in real, but in hindsight it is a good story, and I'm very lucky to be in the position I am as with that teacher and with that woman and everything else, so I've got no complaints.
I guess in the film version, all of that kind of angsting and worry would have been cut out in the montage sequence.
It would have been a montage, exactly, yes, and it would have had a rocking soundtrack behind it to just, you know, just show what a powerful experience it was. So, as opposed to months of agonising and filling in bureaucratic forms and telling immigration officers to go fuck themselves, this is just too much hassle, and then worrying that I'm making the right decision. And so, yeah. But you can't go wrong. If the film of my life, absolutely, that would be a montage.
You're an instructor as well, aren't you, as well as a practitioner?
Yeah. I run my own academy now. I'm kind of as qualified as I can be within that system under my grandmaster. So I run my own academy now down here on the south coast, and I'm actually going back to China again in about 6 weeks or so for another training. Every couple of years, there's a training seminar for the masters of this particular style around the world, and we all kind of gather usually in China because it's sort of equidistant between America and Europe and Australia, so everybody can kind of go, and obviously it's also the seat of the system, so we go back to the ancestral village and we train and catch up with each other and that sort of thing. So, yes, that's coming up soon as well. It's a busy time.
Blimey, that sounds like a film as well. You're just living a film, aren't you?
When you bring it up like this, I start thinking to myself, maybe it actually would make a good film, yes, but there's an awful lot of boring stuff and hard work that would need to be cut out to keep it interesting.
Yeah, but no, we just want to focus on returning to the ancestral village, because that just sounds cool.
It does, doesn't it? Yes, yeah. And it is cool, too, because, you know, this 1836, when this style was sort of, this particular style was officially sort of codified, and the original school that was set up is still there, that was renovated in the, excuse me, in the late 80s. This school was renovated with money that my teacher sent from Australia back to China, and now we regularly go there and train and stuff. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
That is very cool. So as a martial arts instructor and practitioner, are there things that you see portrayed in martial arts films that drive you absolutely insane?
All the fucking time. Sorry. All the time. Yes. No, it absolutely, yes, it bends my brain. I got to the point where I've run a lot of workshops and written a short ebook, in fact, on the subject of writing good fight scenes, because it happens in books and it happens in movies. And there's two things to consider, of course, like, especially with films. On the one hand, you've got what's known as the wuxia films, which are the Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon or Hero and stuff like that. And those movies, they're sort of these classic fantasy epics. So complaining about what the martial artists in those films do is like going to watch Superman and complaining that the bloke flies. Well, so it's totally unrealistic that fella flies. And it's like, well, that's what the film's about, you know, it's a superhero film. That's, so on the one hand, you've got those things. On the other hand, you have movies that are more like supposedly the action thriller kind of sort of films where people just do ridiculous things, like where they get punched clean in the head 50 times and then just sort of wipe a single drop of blood off their lip and then turn around to win the fight and stuff like that, when these people aren't supposed to be classic wuxia superheroes or anything else. And so, yeah, that annoys me. And badly written fight scenes in books just make me want to rage quit the book.
I guess it's kind of similar to me watching kind of costume dramas and things like that. I have to remind myself not to get upset about it, because like you say, you make a very good point that you have to have an element of suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, but, yeah, and it's whether you do that sort of consciously and in context of what you're doing, or whether you do it just because you're doing something badly. So, but you're right, yes. You have to kind of brace yourself for it, because more often, you know, for me, a really good book can be spoiled by a really bad fight scene, so I really have to kind of brace myself. And often if I'm reading a book and a fight scene comes up and it's not a badly written fight scene, there's this enormous sense of relief. So, oh, fantastic, this person's going to be okay. They can put an okay fight scene. They're not going to annoy the shit out of me halfway through the book.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because these things that we specialise in, for the majority of people reading those books, it wouldn't necessarily be an issue, and yet we're kind of hamstrung by specialist knowledge.
We are, but then the other side of that, and a lot of what I try to do when I do, because I've done a lot of workshops at cons and writer centres and stuff about writing fight scenes, and one of the things that I try to emphasise is that when you're writing fiction, you absolutely need to establish your boundaries for suspension of disbelief. You're writing fantasy or horror, then, or whatever, you know, you're going to have magic or you're going to have monsters. And it's like, well, why complain about things that you get a bit wrong? And it's like, well, it's because the authenticity of the world otherwise is what lends those things their power, so that the story is cohesive. And people can kind of, even if they don't really know, they can kind of tell when something's not authentic. And people will research up the yin-yang to get the historical details right, or to try to understand the geography of a world they're creating or whatever else, but then they won't research something like fighting. And so even if people who don't have that kind of mindset like I do, they can't tell you why, but there's a certain level where they'll read that and it just doesn't ring authentic to them, whereas it doesn't take much in terms of research to sort of add some details that do make it quite authentic. And so that's what I try to sort of encourage, is like, you know, things like fighting, you don't really know fighting, so go and research a bit, the same as you research the rest of the stuff in your book. So.
Good advice. What's your favourite martial arts film?
Oh, that's a tough one, man. That's a bit like asking what's a favourite book or a favourite child or something, because it really depends sort of what kind of mood you're in. One of the eternal favourites, in fact, I've got two, probably. One of the eternal favourites is Enter the Dragon, because it's just such a classic. It's so 70s, and Bruce Lee is at, you know, it is in his best form there. And there's just everything about that is just the classic kung fu movie with the tournament and the mystery island and the bad guy and all that is just perfect. So, yeah, that would probably be definitely one of my favourites. But another one of my favourites is a bit more obscure, which is a film called The Silent Flute, or in America and Australia, it's actually called Circle of Iron. It was written by Bruce Lee and a couple of other people, and it was originally supposed to star Bruce Lee, but at the time he was considered too Asian, which happened a lot in the 70s for Hollywood movies. So it ended up starring David Carradine, which is a bit of a shame, but the story is tremendous. It's sort of a philosophical quest martial arts movie, and yeah, it's tremendous. It's yeah, really good fun, and it's one of Eli Wallach's best roles, even though it's very short in that film. So,
ooh, I'll have to go and find that. I love martial arts films.
In Britain, it will be called The Silent Flute.
Okay, right, I'm going to write that down. Latimer, write that down for me, would you please? Thank you. Okay, so moving away from martial arts, onto another very serious question. If your voice was stolen by evil fairies, but you could choose someone else's voice to have in the meantime, whose voice would you choose?
Tom Baker.
You didn't have to think very long about that one.
No, as you were asking the question, the three names popped through my head immediately as you started asking that question. Morgan Freeman, Christopher Walken, and Tom Baker. And yes, frankly, I had to settle for Tom Baker. He's my doctor, and I think he's just got one of the best voices ever. He's, you know, equally resplendent voice to people like Morgan Freeman and those, I think. Chris, I'd like the story of my life sort of narrated, perhaps, by Christopher Walken, because he's just so bizarrely cool. But if I had to have my own voice replaced, I think I'd rather go with Tom Baker.
And then he went back to the ancestral village.
Exactly.
That is my worst ever Walken impression ever.
I'm not even going to attempt mine. But did you know Christopher Walken actually always demands his scripts with no punctuation? He demands his scripts with the punctuation taken out because he wants to decide how to deliver the lines. Whether that's an urban myth or not, I don't know, but I don't care.
I want it to be true.
So do I.
That is a great myth.
He also tugs on his hair for 10 minutes every day when he gets up in the morning to stop himself from going bald, because he tugs on his hair to keep the blood flowing in his scalp going, and he's done it since he was a teenager. And I wish I'd known that before now.
I might have tried it.
Now,
wait a minute. Now, I'm famously gullible amongst my friends. Did you just make that up?
No, absolutely not. I read it in an interview with Walken.
No.
Yeah, every morning for 10 minutes he sits on the edge of the bed and he tugs his hair to stimulate the scalp to keep his hair growing thick. And have you seen his hair? It's like a doormat that's kind of on steroids or something. It's, and you know, whether it's, you know, causation and correlation and all that, but it seems to work for him. He was asked the question in an interview. And I read the interview in a magazine, and apparently it's the case.
Oh, my God. Mm. I don't know, there's just some bit of my world which has changed completely now, because I now imagine him doing that every morning.
I know. You can just imagine him bleary, sort of sitting up, swinging his legs off the bed and going, all right, time to tug the hair. And there he goes. Sits there for 10 minutes before he makes his coffee or whatever he does next.
Oh, sorry, that's completely I just have another cup of tea. Yeah. So I can refocus myself.
Steadying cup of tea.
Yes, a fortifying cuppa. Speaking of gorgeous voices, there's a voice in a TV show recently that I have enjoyed immensely, which is Timothy Dalton's voice in Penny Dreadful. Have you seen Penny Dreadful?
No, it's on my list of things to see, actually. And I was asking on Facebook the great hive mind of what I should see next, because I've got with a young son and busy running the Kung Fu Academy and trying to find time to write and stuff like that. I always end up coming to TV shows and things very late, like I'm always sort of playing catch up. So I've just started catching up now with Constantine, and Penny Dreadful is on the list of things. I've had a few friends recommend it as an absolute must-see. Tim Dalton's voice actually is very good. I think he's a better voice actor than he is person actor, frankly.
Oh, this role he has in Penny Dreadful, just, you know, his voice is just so magnificent. And the thing about Penny Dreadful is that it has Eva Green in it, and I have a massive lady crush on Eva Green in Penny Dreadful, because she's the most beautiful and most terrifying thing ever. Oh. I was wondering if you have a crush on anyone in a TV show at the moment.
That's a good question, actually. I'm not sure that I do at the moment.
You're crushless.
I'm currently crushless. Yeah, well, nothing sprang to mind when you asked the question, so I'm not sure. I'm just trying to think. I did have a bit of a crush on Gwen in Torchwood, and I'm currently just started watching season two of Broadchurch, and that's Eva Miles is the character, or Eve Miles, and she's just cropped up in that again. But I think I have a crush on her because she looks like my wife.
I haven't seen either of the shows, so I don't know the name or the actress.
Right, well, Broadchurch is has just started season two, and it's absolutely tremendous drama, superb writing, and it's completely harrowing. So, and it's just, I think, two or three episodes in the UK. We're just waiting for... Oh, we've just had episode two last week, so, yeah, you guys must be on about three or four now. I think we're a couple of weeks behind. But I recommend it, but you have to see the first season before you go to the second, because the second season is sort of a direct continuation, so...
I've heard many people saying good things about Broadchurch, but unlike you, I come to them late because I get absorbed in like writing books or in recent times being in hostel all the bloody time. So yeah. I miss things as they're happening.
Yeah, well, I got we sort of because the ABC here in Australia is the same as BBC there. Basically, it's the national broadcaster, no ads and all that sort of thing. And I tend to mostly watch ABC. I have a bit of a problem. I can't bear much commercial TV, so I tend to watch TV. I absorb television series by DVD box sets and stuff like that. But I do watch ABC. I watch a lot of ABC 2 now, which is just mind-destroying because of my young son watching shit like Peppa Pig and God knows what else. But then we flick over to ABC 1 and we just happened to catch Broadchurch when it was aired and got hooked. So then we had to sit and watch to the end of it. So then as soon as we saw them advertising that the season 2 was starting, we've kind of automatically started watching it as it's aired, which is a bit unusual. We don't normally do that. But
I prefer the binging model, it must be.
Yes, fair. Yeah, me too, very much so.
So you're on the brink of, or has it already happened, the global ebook release of the Alex Kane series?
It's just happened. It's just happened. The Harper Voyager released the print edition of Bound, the first one in the middle of last year, and subsequently books 2 and 3 in ebook here, and now the whole trilogy has just gone global in ebook, and we're hopefully sort of negotiating for print deals and stuff like that for the rest of the world, and hopefully we'll see books 2 and 3 in print in Australia before too long. But yes, the trilogy has just gone global in at all ebook places. Yeah,
fantastic.
It's quite an exciting time, yeah.
Am I right in thinking that Bound was nominated for the Dithmar?
That was a bit of a surprise. The Dithmar Award, which is basically like, it's kind of like the Hugo Awards, only tiny and insignificant. but it's basically the whole sort of structure of how it works is basically the same as the Hugos, only it's the Australian National Award. And then the shortlist for the Dithmar was just released, and Bound was listed there as one of the 5 nominees for Best Novel, which was fantastic. Yeah, very exciting. Thank you. And I had also a nomination in the Best Novella or Novelette category with a novelette called The Darkness in Clara, which is a horror story that was published in SQ Mag last year. And that, so I've got 2 nominations on the same awards ballot, which is quite a bizarre experience. That hasn't happened before.
That's marvellous. Mm. So tell me about Bound. What's the elevator pitch?
It's the story of Alex Kane, who's an underground cage fighter in Sydney, and he's a very good fighter. He's very well trained, but he has this ability that he doesn't think is anything more than really hard work and training, but he can tell what people are going to do before they do it a little bit, which makes him a very effective fighter. And then one day an Englishman comes up to him and says, I can tell you a lot more about that secret of yours. And Alex doesn't actually want to know, but before he can do too much about it, he gets dragged into this whole new world of magic and monsters and mayhem, and he ends up in... cursed is a bit too light a way of putting it, but he ends up in a shitload of trouble and running across the world trying to save himself from this drama that's befallen him, and fighting all kinds of monsters and creatures and things along the way.
Ooh, that sounds marvellous.
Yeah, lots of action, sort of thriller pacing. It's basically dark urban fantasy and horror and thriller kind of all rolled together, and lots of martial arts and crazy stuff going on.
Well, hooray for global ebook releases then.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And with any luck, we'll have global print releases too before too long. But in the meantime, you can actually get the whole trilogy for like less than a tenner at the moment. I think the current pricing, I think it's like $2 or £2 for Bound, and then $4 or $5 for books 2 and 3. So like $10 or $12 or pounds or whatever for all 3 books at the moment, which is quite astounding. Voyager must be out of their minds.
Latimer, write that down where you can. Okay, so something I like to ask my friends when they come to take tea is what you would choose as the theme tune to your life, because the chickens over there that look very innocuous at the moment are very special singing chickens.
Yes, I've heard their singing before and been damned impressed with chickens. Well, we'll just have to go back for back to what we were talking about before with Enter the Dragon. I think whether it's the best martial arts movie or not, I don't know, but it's got to be one of the best opening theme sequences ever. I mean, 70s and Bruce Lee and martial art, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, what's not to love?
Exactly.
Okay then, little chickens, could you sing the opening theme to Enter the Dragon? And there they go.
Tremendous.
Well, there you go. The chickens know the theme tune. I wonder if they've... Actually, I don't know if I should show them the film, because they might get ideas.
Yeah, you want to be careful they don't start enacting it and having tournaments on secret islands and stuff like that. Although we are on a secret island right now, so it might be... Yes.
Yeah. Well, hopefully there aren't any kind of evil men who have, secret tournaments here. Hopefully this is just an island.
Yes, well, that's true. And if there are any evil men, let's hope that there's also someone like Bruce Lee around. I mean,
I
wouldn't necessarily trust my skills, so yeah, if he's going to show himself, let's hope it's soon.
Yes, but nothing terrible is going to happen.
I'm sure.
We're getting a reputation.
I know, I can't think why.
I can't think why. I mean, you know, it's just a series of unfortunate coincidences and mishaps.
Life happens to people. You want to focus on the negative, then you're just always going to see negative things, aren't you?
Yes, very much so, very much so. Well, let's have a look. Oh, I'm afraid the teapot is empty.
Oh, how disappointing.
Oh, and, to be honest, in this heat, I don't think the milk could have lasted much longer anyway.
True. Probably best to have iced tea anyway for the rest of the afternoon.
You know, I can't get along with iced tea.
I've never been a big fan, to be honest. It's just one of those things people do. My wife's a huge fan, but she grew up in Australia. Maybe it's something about this climate, but, yeah. When it's really hot, I've kind of drunk an iced tea and almost wished it was hot, even though I'm too hot, because... Tea should be hot, but yeah.
Yes, it's part of the natural order of things.
It is, yeah. Some things just shouldn't be messed with.
No. Well, I will wrap up a slice of marble cake for you to take back on the boat.
Oh, very kind.
And I'd like to thank you very much for dropping by to take tea.
Thanks very much for having me. It's been marvellous, if a little sweltery.
Yes, a little hot, but it's so nice after knowing you all these years and never having heard your voice. It's so nice to have heard your voice at last.
I hope it didn't disappoint me.
No, it didn't at all. And I hope, I would very much like one day to be able to come over to Australia, because there's a lovely chap I know there called Graham Storrs. I don't know if you know him as well.
Yes, I do know Graham. Not
Yay!
Well, but I do know him, yes.
I didn't want to do the thing where people say, oh, I have a friend in London, do you,
you
know?
You must know him. Yes. Well, no, he's in the SFF community, so we're sort of Facebook friends, and we've got mutual friends, and I'm not sure that we've ever actually met in person, Graham and I. I think we might have once at a con in Canberra, possibly, but I might be making false memories there. I'm not sure. It all blurs together after a while.
It's the booze.
Hmm. Yes, I'm a big fan of scotch, and that does have occasional negative effects, but I refuse to acknowledge them.
No, be positive.
That's right.
Well, if you ever do see him, please give him a very gentle hug from me.
I will, and if you ever do make it out, you must come and visit us in Dairy Country, and I'll make tea for you.
Oh, that would be lovely. But I don't know if I'll ever make it there, because it's such a long way, and spiders.
Don't fear the spiders. No. They're more scared of you than you are of them. Actually, that's generally true. There's other things to be scared of than spiders. But we do get a bit blasé about it, but you don't see that many of them. So, we're all fine. We'll protect you. We have ways. You just have to make sure you eat Vegemite. That's the, you eat Vegemite on toast, it's like the sort of panacea against... That's why Australians are such big fans of it.
My gullibility meter is twinkling here.
Completely true, I promise.
Well, do you have a safe journey back? If the sea looks very calm, I'm sure you'll be fine.
Yes, I'm sure it'll be quite pleasant. Thanks very much indeed.
Lovely. Well, take care now.
Cheers now. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This way, sir.
What's that noise? It sounds sort of chitinous. Oh, I wouldn't want to say that after a few glasses of port.
I believe it is an army of beetles, Mum.
What? But I used the Bugbegone 2000.
Don't worry, Mum. They're not here to cause trouble. They're just here to herald the arrival of the evil beetle overlord.
But you promised there wouldn't be an evil beetle overlord.
I promised that there wouldn't be an evil beetle overlord in a late Victorian manor house in a remote part of the English countryside last month, ma'am. I never said anything about tropical islands.
This is intolerable.
If it's any consolation, ma'am, they're not here for us. They seem much more interested in Mr. Baxter. They hate zetetics. Always have. Ah, and there's the evil beetle overlord now.
Are you sure that isn't just a bloke in a latex costume?
I'm positive, ma'am. The last time someone said that, he ate their eyes.
Ew! He seems to hate Alan. At least, I assume that's why he's waving all those legs at him. Maybe it isn't a zetetic thing. Maybe Alan squashed one too many bugs in Australia. Either way, he should be fine. A martial artist of his caliber will be able to defend himself no problem. In fact, have we any popcorn, Latimer? I think the fight is going to be splendid.
Of course, ma'am. I always keep a bag of emergency popcorn in case of unscheduled epic battles. However, it seems that Mr. Baxter is running away.
Surely not.
I'm afraid so, ma'am. He appears to be hiding in a nearby bush.
Well, what are we going to do? I don't know any martial arts. What am I supposed to use, harsh language?
It's a little early in the day for harsh language, ma'am.
What's that awful noise it's making?
I believe it's laughing at Mr. Baxter.
Oh, he's coming out. Now they've made him angry. The fight's back on. Get the popcorn, Latimer. Hold on. What's that he's carrying?
Judging from the way he is walking, I would say that he has acquired some local rhubarb and swiftly boiled it up with some soap to create a natural pesticide to use as a weapon.
How on earth can you deduce that just from looking at him?
Well, ma'am, looking at the place he was hiding in the bushes, I can see several severed stalks of rhubarb, along with a discarded wrapper from a bar of soap. His gait has been altered by the weight of the barrel on his back, which contains the pesticide, that perhaps you cannot see from your angle. And as you can observe now, ma'am, he is spraying it on the evil beetle overlord.
Latimer, have you been reading my Sherlock Holmes collection again?
I may have glanced at a story or two.
Well, time for us to go, I think. While Latimer clears away our things, I'd like to raise my teacup to Dave, the newest member of the Order of the Sacred Teacup. Should you wish to join the esteemed order and discover how Latimer became my butler, go to www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy. Find us a new location for the tea there, would you, Latimer? Preferably somewhere with fewer insects.
Very good, ma'am.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman and co-written with Peter Newman. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find previous episodes and www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy to become a Bless Poppet.